That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change.
This is Gorgeous Lives, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
I will not deny my excitement today. I'm sitting in a penthouse apartment with arguably the best view in London. I'm here with a journalist, campaigner, organizer, TV and radio presenter, a mother, a widow, a granny. She's a household name who invented Childline and now Silverline, Dame Esther Ranson. Hello and welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you. Pleasure to have you here. How nice that you like my little two-bedroom flat in what I describe as little old lady land.
I did see a 9-year-old with a Zimmy brain on the entrance, but
And you know, that's how I think of myself.
Well, you ain't one. So you're a dame now. Has that changed anything?
Well, it means that almost every day someone says what a pleasure it is to meet you, Dame Edna. So that means I've had to get myself a fake gladioli just so that I don't disappoint too many people. I think it makes a difference to the various charities because, you know, if I go and open a project or whatever and the plaque says opened by Dame Esther Ranson, it's rather a long name, I do admit, but it sort of makes it an occasion. And it matters quite a lot to me because it was for services to children and older people, and that's really a tribute to the teams in Childline and the Silverline. And I've made it quite clear to them and whenever asked that they did all the work, it's their skill, it's their passion, and I was jolly lucky just to come up with the concepts because I was in the right place at the right time.
Okay, so let's get to it. Let's talk about Silverline. Why is it needed and who is it for?
Well, we say, if you think it's for you, it's for you. And the clue is in the name. So if you are of the silver generation, and we don't set down rigid limits of age. We offer information, friendship and advice on a free helpline, which is open 24/7, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve.
Just when you need it, actually.
3 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon. Yeah. 0800 470 80 90. It's quite easy to remember because it's 0800, which is the free bit. And then you say, who's it for? It's for 70 80 90. And what if you ring that number, which I recommend you do, just to give it a try, because if you don't like it, I would actually like to know, because it's a new service, it's only 2 years old, and we're trying to get it right. So we're grateful for compliments, of course, but we're also grateful for any criticisms people may have, which would help us to improve it. And as it's free and it's confidential, no harm to give it a go.
Why is it different than the Samaritans?
Well, you don't have to be very unhappy. You can be very unhappy. You don't have to be. You can just want to chat. You might want a bit of advice, a bit of information. But during the conversation, someone will say to you, would you like someone to ring you on a regular basis? Mm. And if you say, yes, I would rather like that, someone matched for my sorts of attitudes and interest, then we have a little army of about 2,000 Silverline friends. We need more. And what they do is they donate an hour a week. We pay for the phone calls. You can make them from your own home. And it becomes a real friendship, you know, at Christmas time. We don't tell people where each other lives because, you know, they've got all this modern safeguarding stuff. But if you want to send a birthday card or a Christmas card or a message, you can do so via the Silverline office. And we had so many lovely Christmas cards and messages being swapped between our callers and their Silverline friends. It was really heartening.
So are they volunteers then?
They are volunteers and we need more, please. Mm-hmm. Any listeners who've got an hour to give us, get onto the website, have a look, and it will give you all the details.
So you say you match people. So what would you look at? Their kind of age, religion, their, you know, what they've done as a job? What sort of, how would you do it?
Inside leg measurement, weight. Yeah. None of those things. Okay. What we basically do is, yes, if they've got interests in common, that helps. But a caller may say, well, I'm in my 80s, I'd like to talk to someone in their 40s. Or I'd like to talk to someone of my own age with the same sort of memories. Or I'd like to talk to a man. Or I'd like to talk to a woman. Or you know, whatever you like, you state your preference and we do our best. You know, I'm a dustman and I would like to meet a fellow dustman as a... You don't meet, actually, but it's on the phone. I would like to chat to a fellow dustman.
And what? Tell me a story from, you know, that you've heard from this, you know, that's kind of touched you.
In our pilot, we've only been going 2 years, so, you know, things, it's difficult to look long-term, but in our pilot, there was a lovely gentleman called John who gave me his permission to tell his story, and he was fairly recently bereaved. His wife had died and his sister had died within a few short months of each other, and I do think loneliness has a lot to do with loss. Anyway, he was really depressed, so depressed that he hardly ever left the house. But he did see me on a local television news programme and noted down the number. Can you remember what it was?
0800 4708090.
Well done. You have to remember the four.
Okay.
0800 4708090.
Yes, so it's 4 70 80.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. So, very good. Anyway, he rang the number and he spoke to one of our volunteers called Wilma. He said it would be nice if she rang him on a regular basis. So she did. And she said at the beginning it was really difficult because he was so unhappy. Sometimes he just wouldn't answer the phone and she'd have to keep ringing back. And she could tell from his voice that he'd really lost all self-confidence, all hope, really. But in the conversation, she got him to talk a little bit about himself, and he revealed that he and his late wife had been ballroom dancing instructors. They'd been partners and then become instructors, and they did everything together, you see, which was why it was so difficult for him. And she revealed that she was on her own. She was divorced. And she used to go quite regularly to line dancing. And he said, oh, I couldn't do that. And she said, well, you know, if I could, you could, because it's you don't have to have a partner. So she said, yeah, I'm sure there's stuff going on near you. Have a look. So he looked around and there was a Sirok class. So he went and he enjoyed it and he went back. And a year later, he was running ballroom dance classes on Sunday evenings. And Wilma says he's got his mojo back.
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
And it is interesting how if you talk to someone who cares about you, is interested in you, their confidence inspires your confidence. And it can really be transformational. Someone said very early on, when I get off the phone, I feel like I've joined the human race. Which makes you wonder why they didn't think they were part of the human race before. But it does. We link you back as far as we can to things going on in your community. And we link you to Silverline Friends. We have silver letters as well. And silver circles, which are conference calls. So if anyone could be a volunteer, we have no upper age limit. I talked to someone of 91 who was one of our Silverline friends, very lively lady, and she befriends someone who is 86.
Lovely, it's lovely. I really, honestly, I'm very tempted because, as I know, volunteering is the most rewarding thing you can ever do. Because I worked for a charity and my job was interviewing volunteers, and every person I met was just so fulfilled by what they did. So just that hour a week, as you say, and if you can do it from your own home. Also, if you're feeling a bit lonely, it could fill your gap. So you're helping each other, aren't you?
Certainly. And quite a lot of our callers go on to become Silverline Friends.
Oh, lovely.
And our person who is in charge of our volunteering service, very experienced, says that sometimes that is an easier door to go through. If you're used to being needed and being relied upon, the idea that you can help others is sometimes very enticing. I think that 99% of my life at the moment is spent volunteering.
Well, hopefully you can afford to.
Hopefully. Hopefully the 1%.
Well,
pays for the rest.
You did say you're extraordinarily busy because is it 30 years since Childline was invented?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm putting together a big scrapbook and I see an article written in May 1986 about the fact that we were going to launch Childwatch.
That's what it was called, isn't it?
But that was the programme. But there isn't really a reference to Childline because I think at that stage we were still trying to see if there was another charity that was prepared to set up a special helpline for children. And as we went round and talked to experts, they told us two things. They told us, A, children would use it, and B, they said it would be impossible to set up. So I have...
That's what you want to hear, isn't it?
Well...
I mean, it makes you go for it, Esther, come on.
I'm very lucky because I've inherited some thing from my dad called selective deafness. It's really helpful. It means you hear what you want to hear and you somehow don't hear the things you don't want to hear. So we only heard the bit about the children. And I can't pretend to you it's been easy the last 30 years because the challenge of meeting the demand and the changing demand, because so many children now want to talk to us online and by email, and a lot of the problems they bring childline are new ones, like sexting and cyberbullying and grooming and self-harm and eating disorders that didn't really figure in the children's calls at all. 1986, and of course mobile phones have replaced landlines and so on. Things change. And
Really change. In the last 30 years, I'd say it's the biggest change really for children and culture for a long time.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. I absolutely think you're right.
So now, what is the future then for Childline now? I mean, you said it's part of the NSPCC now.
We are part of the NSPCC family, so I'm a trustee of the NSPCC. But obviously I have a very particular knowledge of and interest in Childline. And so in our 30th year, today I'm going to Manchester. Beginning of the week next week, I'm going to Northern Ireland. I'm going to go around all our bases around the UK, meeting volunteers and staff, talking to people we've helped, talking to people who've helped us, spreading the awareness because we still need to.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. You still need to. I suppose because children, there'll always be new children.
Exactly. Yeah. Constantly new generations of children who need to know why we're there and what we do. And the fact we're a confidential service and we're open 24/7 and we're free. A lot of the lessons from Childline I've imported into the Silver
Line. Oh, I bet that must have been. I mean, they are linked in such a way, aren't they?
Yeah. And it was helpful to me because I think having the excellent track record of Childline, having helped more than 4 million children now in those 30 years, gave me, I suppose, a bit more credibility. Whereas in 1986, I used to hear the phrase, "Who does that woman think she is?"
Well, let's talk about that, who that woman. I just want to go briefly back to your past because I read, I was kind of looking, researching you online, and I read this thing that really annoyed me. It said on Amazon, it said, "You may not have empathy with people because you were brought up in a wealthy Jewish home with servants and went to Oxford." Well, I personally think it's amazing that you're a woman and you got to Oxford and you're Jewish, you know, which are two things that could really be held against you. So can you just tell me about when you were at Oxford, being a woman, getting there, well, being a young woman, and was there any prejudice? Because those were the days when there was a lot around.
I think in those days, it was quite interesting. I was taught by a lot of what were called spinsters.
Yes, the World War I, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, yes, yeah. That was slightly before my time.
No, but they were the older women.
But they were the generation who, there were a lot of men lost in the Great War, as it was called. Mm. And for their generation, the women who taught me, you had a choice, really, between being a scholar and being a wife and mother. If you were a wife and mother, you probably stayed in your village or town and married somebody in your community. If you were a scholar, it was quite difficult as a woman of their generation, but you had to move away and go to university and probably train as a teacher, which is what they'd all done. So my generation was the first one, really, who thought we could have it all, who thought we could be university undergraduates, but then go on to have a career and then also be a wife and mother.
Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support Radio Gorgeous.
So throughout my television career, I was on the front edge of that.
Of feminism. Yeah, really.
Yes, it was applied feminism. Mm. It was the fact that I was making programmes about things like childbirth and postnatal depression and child abuse and safety in children's playgrounds and seatbelts for children in the backs of cars, things like that, which the men left behind at home when they came to work. Women take their whole emotional life with them, in my view, whereas men can isolate their family life or could from their professional life. My late husband didn't. I mean, he used to, I remember once he reached into his top pocket for his pen and he pulled out a child's Mickey Mouse toothbrush, which caused a certain amount of laughter in the high-powered meeting he was attending. But so, yes, I was, if you like, in a pioneering generation of women who decided we could do it all and have it all. Whether we were right, I'm not sure that my daughters feel the same way. I think they feel that, you know, being a wife and mother is a really important job that you ought to not delegate, as I did. One stage we had two nannies because I was working with my husband 7 days a week. God. Which we could ask ourselves to do, but we couldn't ask our team to do, so we had to have two nannies, three children. Yes, well, I haven't read that interesting bit saying I'm liver. But, you know, the great advantage I've had as a journalist, what I think one needs to bear in mind, is journalists go everywhere, ask questions everywhere. No one says of John Simpson or Michael Burke that because they haven't starved in Ethiopia, they don't understand Ethiopian starvation. Our job is to empathise, understand, ask the tough questions, and then bring back a message to the wider public. And that's what I've done all my working life.
Wow, really interesting. So what about That's Life? It was on for 21 years. Was that the crazy years? Was that the most busy time, really? I mean, apart from now, you know what I mean? Because you had the family, you had, you know.
Looking back, I have no idea what I was doing. I must have been absolutely crazy because I was never off duty. You know, wherever I went, people would talk to me about important things in their lives, which was good. I wanted to hear about it. Yeah. As you say, the working life, 21 years, 7 days a week. Mm. But I did have this fantastic husband who was a genuine partner, so that he shared everything. He shared parenting. He made documentaries. When I was on the down season for That's Life, so we were a bit, how we ever met, I don't know, but somehow we must have because we had three children. And he was very understanding, very supportive, very helpful. And I did my best.
He was very modern, actually.
Oh, yeah. Very modern. He was a new man, I think they were called.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
Now, the problem was that he was married.
The problem was at the beginning he was married, absolutely.
Yeah. So how did you... You must have fallen in love when he was married.
I'm afraid we did, yes. Mm. We did, and we were very upset by it, and his family were upset by it. It was awful times, and we tried to give each other up, and we did. But, you know, some people use the word soulmate, and I think that's what we were. And even if we tried to avoid each other, it was very, very, very difficult.
So it was very romantic then?
Romantic in a rather painful way.
Yeah, but I think romance is. I think they go together. I think there's something about, you know, poetry, art, all the great things in life come from the pain, don't they? And you went through a lot of pain to get to the love, you know.
Yeah, I can't say I approve of it. No. If it happened to my daughter.
Wow, that's interesting.
If it happened to my children, I would say, are you sure? Mm. But I'm afraid Desi and I were sure that there was something very special between us. And so we stayed together for, I think it was, 37 years in all. Bless his heart. And then I lost him in the year 2000.
Yeah, how old was he then?
He was only 69.
Oh,
I know.
God.
So that was awful.
Yeah.
And someone said to me, a psychiatrist said to me, there will come a day when you don't think of him every day. Well, that day hasn't come yet, I tell you.
No, because he gave you strength. He was part of you. It sounds like it was more than a part. You know, he's probably always in your head telling you, you know, saying, oh, do this, you know, or why not, or, you know. I can imagine.
Humour. Yeah. Generosity. Yeah. Intelligence. Yeah. Insight. Kindness.
And he's the father to your children.
Father to my children.
You're probably always talking about him with them.
Absolutely. Yes, they talk to my grandchildren about Grandpa. Yes. And my oldest grandson, who is three, he knows what Desmond looked like.
Oh.
He picks him out in photographs.
Lovely. Mm. Now, also I read that he converted to Judaism, which is a massively bold thing to do. Was that when he was ill or was it, you know, I mean, was it last minute or was it when you first married? I don't know, when did it happen?
Neither. It was quite annoying, actually, because I said to him, I've gone to all this trouble to marry out, and now look what you've done. It was actually when my son was bar mitzvahed. And Desi loved Judaism. He had a Jewish working partnership with Bill Morton, who was his partner when they made Man Alive together, and his first wife was Jewish. I mean, he couldn't
have... Oh, so he surrounds himself.
He couldn't have been more Jewish, except apart from not being Jewish.
Yeah.
So then he converted when Joshua had his bar mitzvah. They were bar mitzvahed together. It was charming.
Oh,
it was lovely.
Mm. That's lovely. God, that's a really, really heartening story.
RadioGorgeous.com.
Your legacies, you really have changed the world, because I believe that Childline is in other countries. Is that correct?
Yes, we're trying to count. At the last count, it was 150 other countries. It'd be interesting to see how many countries it's in now. I think it's the biggest, because we had the great good fortune of being able to launch on the BBC. So that first night, which I will never forget, October the 30th, 1986, we had 50,000 attempted calls, and it stayed that high, the demand, for 6 weeks. And now, as I say, we have helped 4 million children. So many different problems: abuse, neglect, bullying, drugs, violence, suicidal thoughts, eating disorders, grooming, sexting, self-harm, so many different problems. And we always need more volunteers for Childline.
Okay.
So again, looking at our website, you'll see where our bases are around the country. And we train you. You don't need any previous experience. And we've had some wonderful people helping us.
And that would be coming into an office, wouldn't it? That'd
coming into an office,
yeah. Yeah.
Working from a Childline base. We've got two in Wales, two in Scotland, two in Northern Ireland, and then we've got them all over England. So just look at the website, you'll see your nearest one.
Now, so as I say, you've left these amazing legacies. You're 75 now, even though, God, you're gorgeous. I must say, you're so attractive. What else would you like to achieve?
Well, I need to see more of my grandchildren. I mean, I saw what happened to my friends when they had grandchildren, and I thought, I'm not going to go gaga the way they have. I mean, they lost all sense. I have lost all sense. And a friend of mine said, when I only had Benji, my oldest grandson, she said, do you often see your grandson? And I said, not more often than once or twice a day. And my car just drives itself to where my grandsons are. And I need to carve out more time with them, because I know that their lives are going to get busier. You know, they'll pretty soon they'll go to full-time school, and then I'll be just the weekends we'll be able to play together. But Benjamin, age 3, knows who's the boss in our relationship. I'm Etta, and he tells me Etta is 2, and he's 3. But the other day he looked at me, he was in the bath and I was standing in the bathroom, and he had a very kind smile as he looked at me, and he said, Etta, you've grown so tall that soon you'll be 3. So I must be doing something right.
Thank you so much, Dame Esther Ransom, for coming onto Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you, and just call me Etta.
Radio Gorgeous, we are your new best friend.
That's life.
That's
what all the people say. You're riding high in April, shot down in May. But I know I'm gonna change that tune. When I'm back on top in June. I said that's life.
That's life.
And as funny as it may seem, some people get their kicks stomping on a dream. But I don't let it get me down. 'Cause this fine old world, it keeps spinning around. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out. And I know one thing, each time I find myself flat on my face, I pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
I tell you, I can't deny it. I thought of quitting, baby,
but my heart just ain't gonna buy it. And if I didn't think it was worth one single try, I'd jump right on a big bird and then I'd fly. I've been a puppet, a pauper, a pirate, a poet, a pawn and a king. I've been up and down and over and out, and I know one thing. Each time I find myself laying flat on my face, I just pick myself up and get back in the race. That's life.
That's life.
And I can't deny it. Many times I thought of cutting out, but my heart won't buy it. But if there's nothing shaking come this here July, I'm gonna roll myself up in a big ball.